with the, all our challenges, the more it is clear that multilateralism is the best answer to the problems we face today.
G20 leaders meet as global issues heat. It's Monday, November 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, clouds over capturing solar energy. Australia fills its prisons. Permafrost is not so permanent. The business of Asian artists. Expanding space travel. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Leaders of the world's 20 biggest economies have endorsed a global minimum tax aimed at stopping big business from hiding profits in tax havens. And they also agreed to get more COVID vaccines to poorer nations. Attending their first in-person summit in 2 years, G20 leaders broadly backed calls to extend debt relief for impoverished countries and pledged to vaccinate 70% of the world's population against COVID-19 by mid-2022. However, on the eve of a crucial UN climate conference, the G20 appeared to be struggling to throw its weight behind the sort of strong new measures that scientists say are needed to avert calamitous global warming. The corporate tax deal was hailed as evidence of renewed multilateral coordination, with major corporations facing a minimum 15% tax wherever they operate from 2023 to prevent them from shielding their profits in offshore entities. The G20 summit, hosted by Italy and Rome, brought together the leaders from the world's major economies where they discussed these issues of mutual concern. White House Chief Correspondent Patsy Wittikaswara, who is traveling with U.S. President Joe Biden, has more from Rome.
Presidente degli Stati Uniti d'America.
The red carpet was rolled out in Rome as Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi welcomed U.S. President Joe Biden and other leaders of the world's largest economies at the G20 summit.
The more we go with all our challenges, the more it is clear that multilateralism is the best answer to the problems we face today.
G20 leaders supported a sweeping global tax deal agreed to by 136 finance ministers earlier this month, including a minimum 15% global corporate tax rate for companies with annual revenues of more than $870 million. It still needs to be implemented within each member country's legal framework.
I'm, you know, confident that the U.S. and countries all around the world that have signed on to this deal will now seek to implement it swiftly and in good faith. But that's now a matter for the domestic processes in all those jurisdictions that have signed on.
On COVID-19, G20 health and finance ministers announced the formation of a new panel to improve future pandemic preparedness proposed by the U.S. and Indonesia, but did not specify funding for it. Meeting on the summit sidelines, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, French President Emmanuel Macron, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said they support Biden's pledge to return the U.S. to full compliance with the Iran nuclear deal, so long as Tehran does the same. Talks are scheduled for November.
We are, of course, counting on Iran to return to the negotiating table. However, time is passing and enrichment is continuing in Iran.
It's the first face-to-face G20 meeting in 2 years. Notably absent are Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin, who joined virtually, citing pandemic concerns at home.
Despite the G20 decisions, not all countries that need them can have access to vaccines. This happens partly because of dishonest competition, protectionism, and because some states, especially those of the G20, are not ready for mutual recognition of vaccines and vaccination certificates.
Activists marched through the streets of Rome protesting the lack of action by G20 leaders in tackling climate change. Leaders move on to the UN climate conference, COP26, in Glasgow, Scotland. Patsy Wittikaswara, VOA News.
With the world roiled by rising energy prices and stretched supply chains, Biden was expected to urge G20 energy producers with spare capacity to boost production, notably Russia and Saudi Arabia. Like many of the other G20 leaders in Italy, Biden is flying straight to Glasgow for the United Nations Climate Summit, known as COP26, which is seen as crucial to addressing the threat of rising temperatures. There's so much more in this story, and you can follow it by joining us on Twitter at VOA Asia and Facebook, as well as our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Secretary of State Antony Blinken raises concerns about Taiwan with China. European MPs meet with Taiwan envoy despite China risks. China hits reset on Belt and Road Initiative. Man with knife stabs at least 10 on Tokyo train. Thai businesses eager for foreign tourists' imminent return. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Join us as well on Instagram, Twitter, and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Some American solar energy companies are calling on the U.S. Commerce Department to expand tariffs on Chinese solar companies to include Chinese-linked products from Malaysia, Vietnam, and Thailand. VOA's Michael Sullivan reports on a debate that has divided the solar industry.
American solar installations benefit from U.S. tax incentives and the ability to use cheap components from China, where lower labor costs and fewer environmental restrictions contribute to the lower price tag.
They don't have to play by the same rules we have to play by.
Financing is another reason, as Chinese businesses get low-cost loans from state-owned banks, letting them cut prices.
It starts decades ago with the buildup in China and truly aggressive pricing. You can call it dumping if you wanted. They built their industry on aggressive pricing.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump imposed a 30% tariff on Chinese solar imports in 2018. While tariffs have since dropped to 18%, some American manufacturers say they are still needed for now.
Until we become competitive enough, we can get in economies of scale to produce at the same cost level and sell at the same price as the Chinese competitors.
In August, 18 solar companies asked U.S. trade officials to expand tariffs to companies in three Southeast Asian nations whose products they say are really made in China.
And of course, the fundamental question is that how much of those commodities or goods, you know, the solar panels and modules, are really made in those countries? It's hard to tell.
That's because solar components can be made in one place and assembled somewhere else. Another reason Chinese solar cells are cheaper, much of the polysilicon they use comes from coal-fired plants in western China, where more than 1 million Muslim Uyghurs have been confined in re-education camps.
About 45-46% of China's polysilicon is produced in Xinjiang with forced labor. I don't think you can get any cheaper than that.
Labor shortages from COVID, power cutbacks in China, and backups at U.S. ports, all creating turbulence in the solar industry. But there is a divide over the tariff issue. Tariffs raise the cost of essential components, says a nonprofit company that makes solar panels in disadvantaged communities.
If you're trying to stimulate a resurgence of manufacturing in the United States, but some of the submaterials required have to come from Asia. And if you put onerous tariffs on those materials,
that hurts American manufacturing, he says. Regardless of where the components are made, demand for solar power is growing.
The industry doubles in size about every 3 years.
Because we are a leader, we are an intelligent powerhouse of these new technologies.
Despite the trade dispute, Cornell's Feng Cheng Yu adds the future of solar power is bright. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a swelling prison population. Happening now in Asia, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's ruling Liberal Democratic Party held on to its majority in Sunday's parliamentary election. Exit polls, however, say it suffered losses that could curb its drive to ease wealth inequality. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we start out a brand new week together on VOA Asia. Despite falling crime rates, imprisonment in Australia is at record levels. That's according to a new government report, as we hear from Sydney and Phil Mercer.
Australia's imprisonment rates have risen by more than 35% over the last 20 years, a government research body report said Friday. Australia's Prison Dilemma, published by the Productivity Commission, an independent government research and advisory body, says the number of inmates is growing faster than in almost every other developed country. While imprisonment has increased, though, recorded crime has been falling. The Commission reported that 35% of sentences in Australia are less than 6 months and for relatively minor offences. Some experts say Australia needs to rethink its tough crime policies that were introduced in the late 1980s. They believe that prison should be for violent and high-risk offenders. Don Weatherburn is the former director of the New South Wales Bureau of Crime Statistics and Research. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that most people convicted of minor offences shouldn't be jailed.
The reason is obvious. They keep their job, they keep their family, and all the incentives are for staying out of trouble. Whereas you go to prison, you'll have trouble getting a job when you come out of prison. And if you do get a job, it'll be a lowly paid job. So in many cases, not all, prison causes more harm than good.
Keeping people in jail in Australia is expensive, around $250 per prisoner per day. Campaigners believe there are effective alternatives, such as home detention, where offenders are monitored, along with drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs. The report has been sent to Australia's state and federal authorities. The current centre-right government, however, appears unlikely to alter its corrections policies. A spokesperson said it wouldn't weaken its stance when it comes to fighting crime. "We will always have a zero-tolerance policy." Official figures have shown there were 43,000 prisoners in custody in Australia. 13,000 were Indigenous Australians, who are vastly overrepresented in the criminal justice system. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Myanmar media and family members said a longtime colleague and fellow party member of the country's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi has been found guilty of treason and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. The reports say 79-year-old Win Tin, a central committee member of the National League for Democracy, was arrested along with Suu Kyi and other members of her government following the military coup in February that removed them from power. Media say Win Tin's sentence appears to be the most severe given so far of any of the top members of Suu Kyi's government. He is reported to have publicly called for civil disobedience in opposition to the military's takeover prior to his arrest February 4th. Suu Kyi has also been charged with a litany of offenses, including breaking coronavirus protocols, illegally possessing two-way radios, accepting bribes of cash and gold, incitement to cause public alarm, and violating the Official Secrets Act.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Thousands of tourists trapped in North China's Inner Mongolia region were transferred to lower-risk cities for a 14-day quarantine after an imposed lockdown to control COVID-19 flare-ups was imposed last week. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We have more VOA Asia. Parts of the planet that were once thought to be permanently frozen are starting to thaw, and that's posing problems for countries like Russia, where permafrost covers vast areas of its territory. The thaw is threatening Russia's oil economy, as Oleksandr Yanevsky tells us in this report, narrated by Amy Katz.
Last year, a thermal power plant in Krasnoyarsk, Russia, failed, flooding nearby rivers with some 17,500 tons of diesel oil. It was the first large-scale disaster of its kind in the Arctic, says Greenpeace. The Kremlin blamed local authorities for this spill, but many scientists and the company that owns the plant say the region's thawing permafrost is to blame because it weakened support for the fuel tank. Vladimir Romanovsky teaches geophysics at the University of Alaska.
This thawing process, melting ice, will lead to changes in topography and microtopography. So where is there lots of ice, this surface will be subsiding rapidly. It's not good for ecosystem generally. It's not good for infrastructure. These changes are impacting not only directly people who live there and work there, but also it has some impact on infrastructure in general, in things like energy security, food and water security, and national security.
The melting permafrost will produce even more carbon emissions, causing climate change, says Romanovsky.
Of course, very well known, this permafrost carbon feedback. So because permafrost contain a significant amount of carbon in frozen form, and by estimates of scientists, it's about twice more carbon in permafrost regions sequestered in soils compared to the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. So roughly speaking, if all of this carbon will release to the atmosphere, the amount of carbon in the atmosphere will be tripled.
And it's not only Russia that faces these problems. The U.S. has felt the consequences of permafrost melting, too. Scientists say the governments of countries with areas of permafrost on their territories need to prepare for an increase in spending to maintain the existing infrastructure to keep it functional. For Oleksandr Yanevsky in Washington, Amy Katz, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, police in Laos have made one of Asia's biggest ever drug busts, seizing more than 55.6 million methamphetamine pills in a single raid in the northern province of Bokeo. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Asian artists and jewelry decorate today's edition of VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
In a hot and stuffy room in Hanoi, Tran Tan Tuk holds up a delicate silk scarf and begins snipping it into tiny pieces, ready to paste onto her works of art. For four decades, Tran has been recreating Vietnamese landscapes using vibrant shades of fabric cut from scarves, traditional ao dai, which is a long split tunic, or whatever material she could find during years of poverty in the 80s. Often using hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth to shape trees, rivers, and patches of sky, the 61-year-old artist doesn't dare to cool her home studio with fans or air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of the Vietnamese capital.
With this fabric, there is no way I can use the fan. The details, before being glued to the frame, are very tiny. So if I turn on the fan, the details will be blown away. I also have a big pile of cloths here, so it is hard to avoid dust. So I don't dare turn on the air conditioner.
For most of the years, Tran has worked with cloth. She also kept a day job as a civil servant and only had time to do what she loved during the night. But her fortune began to change when an American collector bought a work in 2000. And around a decade ago, she started to be invited to exhibitions and her work began to sell. Now her creations sell for between $1,000 and $5,000, and she has taken part in shows around Vietnam. In Mumbai's jewelry bazaar, Kavita Jogani gingerly places her wedding bangles on the shopkeeper's scales. One of the thousands of Indians parting with their most cherished asset, gold. It was not an easy decision. Jogani was desperate after her garment business took a severe hit in the past year and a half with multiple coronavirus lockdowns, making it difficult to pay shop bills and the salaries of her 15 employees.
I have come here to sell the gold because we are in a very financial crisis due to the pandemic. Just to meet our expenses, I don't have any other option rather than selling the gold.
The headline growth numbers suggest Asia's third largest economy is rebounding from the economic crisis unleashed by COVID-19, but there is no end yet to the financial pain for many Indians. Business closures and job losses pushed more than 230 million Indians into poverty in the past year, according to a study by Azim Premji University, leaving many struggling to pay rent, school fees, and hospital bills. Their difficulties have been compounded in recent weeks by soaring prices for electricity, fuel, and other items. Desperate for cash, many families and small businesses have been putting up gold jewelry, their last resort, as collateral to secure short-term loans to tide them over. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Neptune-like exoplanet has been discovered by an international team of scientists. While sightings of this type of planet are quite common, the scientists say this one, called TOI 1231b, is special because it may be surrounded by an abundant atmosphere. According to NASA and the University of New Mexico, whose scientists are part of the discovery team, the exoplanet orbits a small, cool, and dim M-dwarf star about 90 light-years away every 24 days. NASA reports that TOI 1231b has a diameter that's about 3.5 times that of Earth and has a temperature of 57 degrees Celsius. The planet was detected with data from NASA's Transiting Exoplanet Survey satellite and confirmed with observations by scientists using a tool on the Magellan Clay Telescope at Las Campanas Observatory in Chile. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
NASA is moving forward with its next moon mission, plus SpaceX readied its Halloween space launch, and Blue Origin offers an orbiting office park for the future. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
With space tourism officially taking flight, billionaire Amazon and Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos wants you to get to work at an outer world office space his company calls Orbital Reef.
Think of it as a village. Think of it as many different organizations and people in their own parts of Orbital Reef doing their own activities.
Blue Origin announced plans to develop and operate the space station and has partnered the company with Boeing, among others. The station is expected operational by the second half of this decade. But before that happens, and if things continue going according to plan, NASA will deploy its Space Launch System, the SLS, for its next generation of deep space missions. Here, the U.S. Space Agency stacks its fully assembled rocket and spacecraft it plans to use for operations that include trips to and around the moon. It's part of NASA's Artemis program, and the agency plans to launch an uncrewed round-trip mission to the moon in early 2022 with a goal of putting the first woman and next man on the moon by 2024. In other news, the astronauts of SpaceX Crew 3 arriving here at Kennedy Space Center in Florida are making final preparations for a launch scheduled on October 31st, Halloween. The launch would mark the American space tech company's fourth trip carrying NASA astronauts and its fifth overall. But a potential setback threatened the mission with news of faulty plumbing. SpaceX's Inspiration 4 mission, or its passengers rather, suffered a leaky toilet that Space.com reports has since been resolved. Finally, the sun may be the best friend of solar power, but it seems the sworn enemy of modern technology. Researchers at this lab in England study how solar radiation in space impacts digital electronics on Earth by blasting them with neutrons to simulate solar flares and their impact on technology.
A neutron comes down, hits that memory, hits a bit of silicon in that memory state, and turns a zero into a one or a one into a zero. Everything in our digital world is stored by ones and zeros.
Experts say radiation spikes and the flipping of ones and zeros happen almost every year. This is an inconvenience for consumer electronics, but also dangerously threatens autonomous cars and their ability to see and navigate the world around them. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We thank you for joining us today for VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.